Hello and welcome to the first ever episode of the Run of Play podcast. We're going to try and provide you with a fresh take on football with no filter, no censor and no suits. We're going to be joined by some of the best guests in the game across football and the culture that surrounds it. So it's going to be me, Liam, with my friends Cam, Abby and Elliot. We've been wanting to do this for ages and we finally got around to it. So yeah, we're really excited and we hope you enjoy.
Run of Play, we're so pleased to be joined by Troy Townsend, Head of Development at Kick It Out and a key leader in the fight against racism in football. Kick It Out is a force against racism, homophobia and sexism within the beautiful game. Troy, thank you so much for joining us. Honestly, a pleasure to have you the first guest on the show.
Wow, I didn't know that.
You are.
This seems professional.
I'm honoured.
Well, we're so happy to have you. How have you been enjoying football since the restart?
I wouldn't actually say enjoying. I wasn't looking forward to it anyway coming back. I thought there was a lot of risks. I didn't think, particularly with the government guidance, that football was ready to come back. But they've, you know, it's the safest environment apparently, and it's done well. I can't say I've been infused by what I've been watching. You know, I've tried to watch games, I've tried to distance myself from games because it just, you know, I think what it's done is prove how much the value of the fans are, and I'm not quite sure football appreciated that previously. So whilst yes, appreciating that it's back and it's in a new norm, I can't wait to get back and watch a game in the flesh because then I can get the buzz going again. And I think that's probably where I'll leave that one.
Yeah. Well, they're hoping that we're going to come back in maybe October time, aren't they?
Yeah, I just thought when I was watching it, the Liverpool trophy parade, I thought that was like the, for me, that was the biggest moment that sort of emphasised that sort of like lack of fans yesterday. Yeah. Like that, you know, that it was actually quite, I was quite sad watching it. Like they deserved that moment, and it, even though they put a lot of effort into making it special, I thought for me that was like the, even though there's been a lot of times it hasn't felt quite right, yesterday just sort of felt like that was like the signifier for me that, you know, it's not what it's
been. To be fair, I think they did a great job in what they did, you know, in putting it on and making it seem authentic. But as you look out and you see no one there cheering you and buzzing you, obviously it must be really, really difficult. But I thought they did really well, in a sense, in putting it on and making it as good as what it was in terms of a spectacle. Obviously, we're sitting at home, so it's exactly the same feeling, isn't it? You know, really?
Yeah. It's telling that they have to kind of put the crowd noise on, isn't it, really? and they're trying to kind of make out that, you know, we don't miss the fans, but really, we do.
It's so boring without the crowd noise as well.
It's rough, yeah.
And to be honest, what it must do for the players as well, you know what it's like. Fans can G you up, they can put you down. You want to try a little bit harder because you hear someone having a go at you. Do you know what I mean? So just that, even that gives an extra 5, 10, 15%, and it's absolutely what's been missing.
Yeah, I have wondered that actually from watching some of the games, whether some of the games might have been a bit different if there was fans.
For sure.
Yeah.
I think the swing of games always, you know, kind of, you can feel the tension in the stadium and fans are on your back and, you know, away fans and home fans and things like that is what kind of makes football what it is.
Yeah, so, yeah, that sort of fan, Abby, that gets on everyone's back.
Oh, absolutely.
It's got a reputation, haven't you, Abby?
Oh, I do.
I hope that because of not having fans in, that it shows the Sky Sports and BT's like the value to their product that fans give, because I think, you know, everyone has seen, you know, ticket prices and scheduling of games where on like a Monday night for a Tottenham fan to go up to Newcastle, and it's like that's just not feasible.
Or
so hopefully
fans to go up to Newcastle.
Yeah. Like, hopefully it shows the value of fans to their product and to treat them a little bit better than I think they have been in the past. Mm.
I think that's football clubs as well, though. You've got to add the clubs in it as well, you know, and hopefully, like I say, this turnaround with this, where everyone starts to appreciate the value of the fans and what they contribute to a match day experience and, you know, how they should be spoken about. You know, I think we always lean on the negative side of fans, don't we? You know, and you know, particularly in my field, you know, the abuse, etc. But, you know, a packed stadium on any given day is a beautiful thing, and it's something that really football needs to look at and hopefully, you know, look at slightly differently when we are allowed back totally as such.
Mm. Yeah, of course. Well, next season will probably come round very soon. And obviously, you know, we've seen West Brom go up last night, Leeds went up a few days ago, and it's been so long, finally, that Leeds are, you know, in the Premier League. Do you think that's a good addition to have them in the Premier League?
there's two parts of me here. One is absolutely, as a football club, as a kind of club steeped in history and everything that Leeds United is, you know, it's a massive football club waiting to happen again. You know, it's a club that deserves to be in the Prem, and that's tough to take, so I'm saying it through gritted teeth, but they deserve to be in the Prem. They're everybody's hated team as well, aren't they? But maybe there's a new feel about them now, getting back into the Prem. And those fans, I've had the privilege of experiencing those fans on a home experience, and I've got to say, the noise at Elland Road, I'm not sure if the Premier League is ready for it, because when they get going, they are an absolute vibrant bunch, that's for sure. And it's a hostile environment in a good way, you know. So yeah, that part of me is like, brilliant. You know, the Premier League deserves clubs like Leeds United. There's no two ways about it. And I think that, you know, I think they'll hold their own. I think they will do all right as well. You know, it's hard to predict because, like I said, they won't have the fans there, but you can see what they've done without fans so far. They've kicked on and, you know, didn't look like they were never going to make it, to be totally honest. So it's a great addition. And hopefully they can probably do a Sheffield United and you know, hold their own and be up there competing.
They will if they sign Zlatan and
Cavani.
People they're linked with, yeah. But I mean, he's done wonders in the couple of seasons he's been there, hasn't he? Just completely changed the team.
Yeah, I think what you're saying, Troy, about like maybe Leeds are a little bit different now. Like for me, I feel with Bielsa, there is, even though everyone loves to hate Leeds, there does feel like there's something slightly different about them now. And there's sort of like a cult sort of feel about them, where even though like a lot of people, I think it's easy to love Leeds now, once they've been in the Premier League for a bit, everyone will be like, oh, that's why we didn't like them. But I think there is definitely a slight change with Bielsa being there that makes it feel a little bit more special.
All the classic retro Leeds shirts will be out on the streets and festivals and stuff.
For sure. I mean, that,
but there's a style about them, isn't there? There's a style about them in terms of the way they play, in terms of, you know, the pressing and that, and it was probably that let them down last season, apparently. You know, they worked so hard to do so much, and then by February, March, they gassed themselves out. But he, you know, he's learnt by that experience, you know, and there they are. They sound like they've got loads more energy in them, and if there was another 10 games to go, they'd probably complete them and win all 10. The only thing is the quick turnaround from obviously being champions to absolutely getting your mind on now, and you've got to play in the Premier League in not so long. That may catch them a little bit short. They don't get the break that they should get. You know, it's a massive turnaround, transfers and whatever else. So it will be interesting. It'll be interesting because, without doubt, the difference of playing in the Championship, although it's an absolutely competitive and great league, to coming up into the Premier League is, you know, it's uncomparable. So he's got to do a lot of work in a short space of time, but I think they've got the right guy to do that.
I think it'll be interesting for all the teams with such a quick turnaround, actually, to see how they will fare at the start of that season. And then obviously we're moving on to Champions League, which also starts in a few weeks. So we're not going to be short.
Is that still a thing, Champions
League? It's still a thing. We're not even going to be short of football this summer, so we're all quite lucky.
August is stacked.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the teams that are left in it are all the kind of usuals. Obviously, we've got Atalanta as well. Out of those teams, who's your favourite to win it?
It takes on a whole different shape now, doesn't it? It's got a whole different meaning. You've got Man City, who have been playing competitively. You've got Real Madrid, who have been playing competitively. And then Paris Saint-Germain, who haven't really, you know? Mm. So it's a completely different competition. I still see something wrong with Manchester City. I just don't see them on a European scale finally getting over the line for some reason. So I'm going to stick with one of the tried and trusted, who are Real Madrid.
I'm with you there, Troy.
I just think they've come back really well. You know, they've won the title in the Liga, and you know, that's no mean feat anytime. I know Barcelona were probably the worst Barcelona side that we've ever experienced in my lifetime, that's for sure. But you know, they've done it, and it's a difficult league to win, no doubt. So maybe they'll go in with their heads, you know, proper up and at it. And the Champions League has got Real Madrid written all over it all the time. Though I do like Atalanta, and you know, who knows? Could it be the year of the underdog? Who knows?
I hope so.
Liam's buzzing.
We were talking beforehand, and we were just saying that, like, you know, you look at Atalanta, and they lost their first three group games, so sort of, you know, written off. They're like out of the tournament, or whatever. Their first time as well, and I think they've broken the goals record in Serie A. So, like, I think like what you said as well about those teams that have still been playing, I think will have the edge. And And also the element as well that, you know, like last year when you saw all those comebacks and those swings where, you know, the fans were as important as the players at times. You know, you look at like Liverpool, Barcelona, whatever, and you're not going to have those moments. If there's a strong team going into it who are sharp and playing good football, you feel like maybe they have a better chance than they normally would.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, absolutely.
I actually think Man City will go through against Madrid with the advantage that they have in the first leg. Obviously, they won away. They won away, didn't they? But I personally, PSG, I think, even if they haven't been playing competitive football, just their team with Neymar back and Mbappe, it's just so difficult to see past that.
They've always had those players in terms of, you know, those kind of players who have made that PSG side that we all think, you know what, this year's got to be their year. And, you know, you go back to when Barcelona turned, you know, that big scoreline around, you think to yourself, that shouldn't happen to a top side who's managed properly, whose whole focus is around winning a massive competition like that. And the only question marks I have against Man City is obviously look at the semi-final defeat in the FA Cup last weekend. You look at the Southampton defeat. There's something, I don't know, they just, defensively, obviously, they've got so many frailties that I think a side like Real Madrid can still go to the Etihad with no fans and win 3-1, you know, 2-0, something like that. So it's not as difficult a task as probably what it would have been.
City are used to playing in front of no fans. Anyway.
Hey, good way to endear all those City fans. Done, episode one. All right, on a more somber note, we'll talk about the sacking of Nigel Pearson. So we were having a chat before, and obviously since 2015, which is only 5 years ago, they've had 5 different managers. And Kiko Flores was twice, Mazzarri, Marco Silva, Javi Gracia and Nigel Pearson, who's obviously now sadly gone. Surely changing managers so often does not bode well. And I mean, they're just, you know, kind of holding on for dear life. Do you think that's a good way to kind of manage the club?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, there was people saying, you know, I don't even know how Nigel Pearson got the job. If you want to be totally honest, I don't know how he got the job. He was managing out in Belgium Division 2. You know, no one had heard of him since, you know, he'd done very well in saving Leicester City, but the following year, that Leicester City team went on and won the league. And I just think how this merry-go-round of managers goes round and round and round. But listen, anyway, apart from that, of course it's not. You know, you're never going to, how are you going to get the staple, you know, be stable in terms of the back room, let alone what we see as a product on the park? You know, every manager has a different style. Every manager wants you perform in a different way. 4 managers this season, and they absolutely deserve to be where they are, you know, because you can't do that. And maybe the only time they will learn as the ownership of the football club is if they do go down.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that might be the point of saying we cannot continue like this. But I think the chairman's too hot-headed. I think he's too rash, you know. They've made some poor decisions in terms of their managers. And then when they've had good managers in, if they don't, I don't know, if they lose a couple of games, then the opinion changes straight away. So I've got to be honest, I'm going to tip them to go down. I'd never think a club deserves to go down, but maybe they do. And maybe it might be the thing where the fans, you know, will start to see through all the promises and demand that the club, you know, has some stability about it and chooses a manager that is, you know, has a long-term vision. Rather than the short-term vision that seems to have been put in place for far too long.
Yeah.
You look at the players that they have, like, they really shouldn't be in that conversation.
No, definitely
like,
not.
I know they've had a few injuries, but like Deeney and Decore and Delafeu, those kind of players like that can win you games, they shouldn't be near it. But
the only thing I would say is how many times have we said that? You know, there's been teams that have gone down and we've all identified players that think they're match winners.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like I say, you know, form is a wonderful thing, you know. Good form is brilliant, bad form is terrible, you know. Yeah. And if you're in a rut, particularly where the games are, you know, Saturday, Sunday or Tuesday, Wednesday, or do you know what I mean? You can't get out of that rut, maybe as you would do if you put a whole week of training in. So they've suffered on the back of that, no doubt.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see who does go down. Obviously, it kind of looks like Bournemouth might go down as well. And obviously, if Villa can stay up, it'd be between kind of Watford and Villa. Who would you prefer? Obviously, would you prefer Watford to go down, Troy?
You know, if you had asked me a couple of weeks ago, I wanted West Ham or Watford to go down.
Yeah. I'm just
thinking Villa and Bournemouth only had to win one game. But West Ham have obviously come through. It's got to be Watford. I think Bournemouth are gone. It's got to be Watford. I think the momentum is with Villa. Watford play Arsenal. And I think it's a tough task, although who knows what Arsenal are going to turn up. So, but yeah, I think it'll be Watford.
Yeah, it was a very good win for Villa the other night. Sadly, no Ballon d'Or this year. Had it not been cancelled, I mean, we always have the Messi-Ronaldo debate, but there's always a shout for a Kevin De Bruyne, maybe Sadio Mane. Who do you think would have taken it this year?
What a question that is. Wow.
I mean, there was outrage when Modric took it. And what a player he's been consistently. And it was outrageous that everyone thought that Messi or Ronaldo didn't take it home.
To be fair, if you look at the way Man City won the league last year and the quality, you know, add Raheem Sterling to Kevin De Bruyne and you'd think that they would have been in with a chance of winning it last year. Not this season for me, De Bruyne. I think you've got to look at the champions and there's so many, you know, for me, Van Dijk, you know, you take Jordan Henderson out, Liverpool don't look the same, but they get by. You take Mane out, they've still got goals in them. You know, they'll sneak a 1-0 win or whatever. You take Van Dijk out and that whole defence takes a different shape, takes a different meaning and doesn't have the leadership that it needs to compete. And that's why, for me, last season he was player of the year. I know people are going Henderson or Mane this season, but I'd like to think that sooner or later, a defender might take the big one because we have to show the value of defenders as well, you know. Not everything is about the goals scored and the creation of goals, but sometimes, you know, Liverpool needed two fits and they got the goalkeeper and they got the centre-half. Mm. That's what's made them into the team that they are, that has meant that they've won, you know, four trophies, you know. And so, yeah, I'm going to go proper random. I'm going to go with Van Dijk. It would never happen, but that was my vote. So.
Is it Cannavaro, like the last defender to win it? I can't remember exactly, but Cannavaro.
How long ago was that?
I don't think there's too many people that would disagree with you though, because he's like just revered. Like if you think he only joined about two, three seasons ago, kind of. So not even that. He came in the January, didn't he?
There's a few shouts for Lewandowski. Yeah. That's the one sort of one player in the foreign leagues as well.
Be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he shouldn't be allowed to win it with the TikToks he's been doing. Like, it's like his dance moves mean that he should be ruled out of any prize.
Just like solid. Can't do that.
Brilliant.
All right, let's talk about your role, obviously, at Kick It Out. So, you know, you obviously...
Oh, is this where we get serious?
We're going to get a bit serious. So we obviously touched on it earlier. Can you give the listeners a bit more of an insight as to the work that you do and what you're currently working on?
So my title is Head of Development. I don't know what it means, to be totally honest, because we just do everything. I do deliver the education, so construct the education, deliver education into the academy environment. So under nines all the way through to under 23s, staff and parents in the Premier League and the English Football League. And also run a mentoring program. Mentoring program is called Raise Your Game. It's a program that helps people predominantly from underrepresented groups, so the underrepresentation within football, to be mentored, to get work placements, to get work opportunities, to, you know, go and see what it's like out into the big wide open world that football brings. So anything away from the playing side of it, I cannot offer anyone a contract. So I saw all your eyes thinking, whoa, I wonder if Troy can get us a contract somewhere. Cannot do that. But, you know, working in the media, working in grassroots, working just in your community, refereeing, sports science, an intermediary, you know, all football business, all those areas we get mentors in and just try and inspire the young people. You know, when I wanted to try and get into the industry, you couldn't get near anybody, you know, you couldn't talk to anybody, you couldn't get near anybody. So you had to learn as you were walking along. But yeah, so we provide that opportunity and it's a massive kind of role that we have in trying to, you know, as we talk about football being very white always, is to try and change that representation and make football, particularly in a working environment, more reflective as like in the playing environment. So those are the two standout things that I do. I also, obviously, you know, whenever there's an incident of discrimination, I'm kind of like the go-to person. I'm sure I'm on people's speed dial, you know, just to be able to give a comment or just to share my views and opinions on why we still see, you know, racial discrimination and discrimination in other formats landed on our plate, particularly in England. We're very vocal when it happens on foreign soil. So if England are getting abused out in Bulgaria, as they did, or in Montenegro, all of England seems to stand up and talk about it. But yet, when it's on our shores, and we've seen a number of incidents, unfortunately, this season, we seem to go very, very quiet. So it's to make sure that it stays, and we challenge and empower players to speak up as well. And I think that's what's, you know, particularly in this period of time, that's what's happening. The players are showing their value and their worth and their importance. And, you know, despite whatever I say, the value of a player talking in the manner that they do, you know, a Ryan Sterling or a Danny Rose is the most important voice that you can hear, you know. So, yeah, that's kind of like, in a nutshell, the nuts and bolts of the job. But people think it's glamorous and... Yeah, I'll tell you now, it's not glamorous.
I mean, it's a shame we even have to be discussing it, kind of, yeah, you know, yeah, in this day and age, really. Yeah. And Kick It Out's been going for 27 years or so, hasn't it? So quite a long time.
Since 1993, yeah.
Do you feel, with all the things that have been going on with the BLM and obviously, you know, because of everything that happened with George Floyd, do you think that has made people kind of take more awareness in Kick It Out or gone the other way?
There's a lot of goodwill out there, and there's a lot of goodwill. There's been a lot of people who have touched base and have said, you know, we understand you're the organisation in England. So people from, you know, foreign soils who have said, you know, we keep atting you in kind of situations where we want people to learn more about discrimination, and you're the English equivalent of what they do in their own country. I think it's too soon to judge. I'm always wary, always err on the side of caution when we're talking about matters like what we are. And I've seen it before, you know, people said that when Raheem Sterling spoke out on his social media platforms about the industry, that was a seminal moment. The minute a ball was kicked the following week, people had forgotten about Raheem Sterling and they were interested about who scored what goal and when, you know. So he's done well in terms of his platform and to keep the conversation going. But unfortunately, it's a conversation that too many people don't like to have. I think we're in a different space at the moment. It's not football's design, but obviously because of the unfortunate situation surrounding George Floyd, I think we're in a different space now, and maybe this could be the moment where we do see change, and it will be long time overdue, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we were obviously all brought to the attention, you know, the online stuff that goes on. So I think it happened to, you know, Wilfried Zaha, Akinfenwa, Ian Wright, just to name a few. And they were showing the disgusting abuse that they get on social media. I think there was one today, actually, from, was it Jude Bellingham that tweeted one? Yeah.
Jude Bellingham,
that is so recent and just, you know, ridiculous to see. But obviously it's not a new issue, and it's really not surprising, you know, with all the things that we're learning nowadays and seeing. What more can social media platforms do to prevent that? Because obviously social media plays such a big role in football and everyone's life kind of now. So what do they have to do to kind of, you know, stamp it out?
Take ownership. Simple as that. Take ownership. I mean, I said this earlier on today, if you look at Instagram's pinned tweet, it says how, you know, they don't condemn racism in any format and they, you know, absolutely stand by the Black Lives Matter movement. But yet they allow a 12-year-old, so in regards to Wilf Zaha, Sikh images, you know, of the Ku Klux Klan, of a blacked out face with racial connotations on it. They allow it on their platform. And when people report, it says that it doesn't break community guidelines. So, you know, they have to look into themselves and say, well, absolutely, we're not doing anything about this, you know. Yes, sometimes you'll see someone tweet something and their profile is taken down straight away. But what is that individual doing? Because that individual can go onto another phone and set up a profile immediately. So you're not dealing with the issue. So for me, they've got to put their hand up, which they don't seem to do. There's a lot of lip service. There's a lot of blah, blah, blah without anything coming after that. And they've got to just take ownership of their platforms. But for me, until there's a financial... until there's a financial situation where they're fined large sums of money, I really don't think they care.
Is there any dialogue from them coming to Kick It Out, or are they completely just silent on things that you might bring up with them, or you know, I guess they're sort of like a faceless platform, aren't they? You can't really, there's not one person that you can go and hold accountable, but...
Mark?
Yeah, Mark Zuckerberg, can you jump on the line?
We was in dialogue with them last summer. We're in constant dialogue with them, to be fair, but when we finally got face-to-face and I was in that meeting, I just left underwhelmed, to be totally honest. I didn't really think that the promises that they're making were going to be followed through. I just felt that they thought that we were probably wouldn't know much about what they were talking about and would accept exactly what they said. And, you know, when my colleague said to me, oh, how do you think that went? And I just said, I just wasted 90 minutes of my life because it was just boring and no actions came out of it. We continue to talk, we continue to press, but, you know, how long does it take? You know, it shouldn't really take that long to make your platform fit for purpose, you know, so that everybody can use. And we've got to talk about the good aspects of social media as well, you know, because there are so many good aspects of it. Twitter, Instagram, all the platforms, there are so many good aspects of it. But obviously, you know, I'm constantly talking about the negative aspect and the aspect that I think that they should be doing more to eliminate from their platforms.
I think Jermaine Genus and Micah Richards were mentioning just a verification process to
just give your passport.
You know, it's pretty, you know, if they wanted to solve it, they could. I think, you know, they can do... They have that power of just saying, you know, you need to be verified. You know, that happens in all walks of life. So, yeah, obviously, if there is no financial benefit to them, then they don't really care, do they?
Not sure a 12-year-old's got much in his pocket money to pay out. But hefty fine for his dad. You know, you gave a really, really powerful speech on Sky Sports during that interview you did. And, you know, you talked about football in general underperforming on it. And obviously, has there been anything, obviously we've seen the one since the return, but do you think once we go back into stadiums, after everything that's happened, do you think there'll be a change, like with the fan power? Because obviously, you know, the fans want to kick it out as much as, you know, you do and everyone else does. So can you see that there would be a positive change when everyone goes back and call people out on it?
Well, I was working on an initiative with a couple of fan groups that obviously we had to put to bed due to the pandemic. And for me, that would have kind of told us what space we're in, because it was to bring most of the fan groups together from the Premier League, you know, the YouTube channels and stuff like that, and really talk about how we can kick racism out of football, you know, by having, you know, a live debate, by having, you know, messaging around the fan bases. And for me, that would have been the real telltale sign if we could. Listen, it's a minority in the grand scheme of things. It's a minority that continue to splurt the hate, but it's a minority with an increasing loud voice, you know, and it's a minority that we have to try and get the better of. And I honestly think the power of the fans, the good people, the people that go there to support their team, yeah, maybe get upset a little, you know, a little bit and throw out some expletives, but that's, you know, that's almost part and parcel of what we, you know, what the game brings, you know. But definitely the self-policing part of it would be the best part of it. And I think, you know, when we come back and hopefully when we get fans back, that's what we'd want to drive that message home, you know. And hopefully, you know, there's always an issue in football around it, but let's see those issues kind of diminishing rather than increase.
Troy, are there any like initiatives that, or just like advice maybe for you to, for the listeners to kind of get involved with, or... are there any things that you've seen that have been successful, like you were saying about fan groups? Like, is there kind of one area where people can kind of look up and start to get involved?
Well, we run an initiative with the Football Supporters Association called Fans for Diversity. And although what it says on the tin, it's for diverse fans, it's for allies as well, you know. It's for people that are part of the game that generally just want to see their fan bases being more reflective and wants to support people who sometimes would struggle to go to a game because they're fear of, you know, whether it's the colour of the skin or whether it's, you know, because they're from the LGBT community. It's all those things, you know, that maybe others don't appreciate, that sometimes it could be very difficult just going to watch your team, you know. And that initiative is growing in terms of different fan bases growing out of that, and they're having their own groups where they can go to as kind of like a safe haven. Or just get involved with the community part of your club, you know, and maybe sometimes it's setting something up yourself. Yeah. You know, I always see the power of fans doing stuff by themselves and setting up initiatives and trying to link them back into the club, you know, trying to get the club to endorse what they're doing you know, as part of the fan base that can escalate and grow quite quickly. So definitely the Fans for Diversity initiative, but also just think constructively about doing stuff yourself. And, you know, we'd always be, you know, I'm at hand, but always be supportive of anyone that does that if they need advice.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on, I thought it was very interesting what you said at the start when you mentioned about, well, you know, sort of you see it in foreign countries, like Bulgaria or Montenegro or whatever, and there's that goodwill, there's that sort of, you know, that outcry of, oh, that's not what we're like here or whatever. One thing I just wanted to sort of touch on was, I think that sort of goodwill, it's an easy thing right now. You obviously don't want to be, you don't want people to be overly cynical, but what you said about when it's very reactionary and when things have just happened and there's this sort of initial outcry, people, you know, what can I do to help? Oh, I can't believe this is going on, and that sort of initial passion. And before, sadly, like, you know, we've seen that sort of wane in football when there's been a big moment and then it's just sort of died out. And I've seen you talk before about the Rooney Rule, and that being one area where it's almost, I was reading today, it's absurd, because it's basically the rule being, it doesn't rely to Premier League clubs, but below that it's a case of, you know, someone from like BAME background has to be sort of, you know, intro to the role, or see if, you know, be interviewed in some way. And I just wanted to sort of touch on that really, because I know you've been a critic of it in the past, and I feel like that's one of the biggest examples of what's around the moment, where it's sort of goodwill without any real action, and it's sort of there, it's, you know, it's box ticking, it doesn't really do anything.
It's not fit for purpose. It's not, you know, in its format, it's called the recruitment code in this country. And there has to be an open recruitment process for it to actually come into action, you know. You think about it, what's the latest example? Latest example would be Middlesbrough Football Club. You know, John Woodgate got sacked. Yeah, Jonathan Woodgate got sacked. I think 45 minutes later, what's his face? Neil Warnock is in charge.
Yeah.
That's not an open recruitment process. Yeah, that is speaking to Neil. Are you available? Do you want it? Yes, I do. All right, we're going to sack John and we'll announce you straight away. So they sack John, announce Neil straight away, which means there's not an open recruitment process. And it's not the club's fault, by the way. It's a loophole in the actual code, which means the clubs can do that and they won't get penalised. There's no sanction against them for doing that. So until they change the wording in their code, then it's not fit for purpose. But yet, why do 72 clubs get involved, or supposedly get involved, but the elite 20 not interested?
Yeah.
You know, if it's going to run, it's going to run right away through the system and make it fit for purpose, you know. But at the moment, if I owned a football club, let's be serious, any of us, if we owned a football club, we're going to sack a manager. We're going to go and identify who we want as our replacement.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to shift through 500 CVs because Tom, who plays Football Manager, thinks that he can manage my football club.
There's a lot of them.
You know, I want some. Yeah, exactly. You know, I want a guy who's absolutely, I know, has got a track record. Mm. Yes, I'm not saying that all clubs do that. There are some clubs that go through a process, and going through the process, they may still appoint in-house, but at least they've gone through a process, you know. But It's just not fit for purpose for me, unfortunately.
It's unfortunate because obviously we see a lack of black managers in the game. I mean, Darren Moore, who at West Brom, is kind of the only one that I could really think of. Why do you think that football has just prevented that, especially in the top league, obviously? It, you know, when people like Gerrard and Lampard are in really prominent jobs.
Yeah, we've got five, we have to call them black and minority ethnic managers, because that's the title that we have to give them. It dates from way back. If you think about how black players are spoken about, you know, they're not deemed as leaders. They're not, how many captains do we have? How many that play in the pivotal role, the number 10 role, the role that kind of knits the units all together? How are they often described? And there's this feeling that until we change what happens in the boardrooms, until we make the boardrooms more reflective so that we can appreciate the qualities of black managers or black people, sorry, as players, you know, and then moving into the coaching environment as potential to manage football clubs, until we have better representation at the highest level, then those conversations will always be here, will always be at this stage, you know. A Steven Gerrard, and it's nothing against Steven Gerrard or Frank Lampard, but they're deemed as England's finest.
Mm-hmm.
So why wouldn't they be given the opportunity to then put all what they've had up there from a playing side of it into their coaching circles, you know? And it's quite damning of the game, to be honest. You know, you think, and I'm going to say a word here, Abby, I know a name here, I know you won't like it, but Sol Campbell, you know, he's, listen, Sol's a bit off limb as such in terms of how he presents himself, but he's taken on two managerial roles, one at Macclesfield and one at Southend. Out of 92 clubs or 91 as we have this season, they're probably the worst two clubs in terms of financial status to ever take on board. Macclesfield, he saved them. And Southend, listen, in the end, they parted ways. And I think that was due to financial situations as well. But, you know, whatever happens, he's judged as Sol Campbell.
Yeah.
He's judged as the Sol Campbell that has left Spurs and, as you know, as a Judas. And as, and he's never been able to lose that tag, by the way. And listen, I understand the feeling of Spurs supporters and that. And some of his posts sometimes are a little bit quirky. So, yeah, you wonder. But, he's done a job. But he will always be judged, I think, not on the job that he does. And I just don't think that's, I don't think that's right and don't think that's fair. Maybe he's an extreme example, but it's an example that I'm going to use. And I've known a number of coaches who say to me, Troy, there's no opportunity there. And they're as highly qualified as any of the managers you see go right round that wheel hundreds of thousands of times.
Yeah, I mean, you see, using Frank Lampard as an example, isn't it? It's just, he did a season at Derby. He got in a good job at Derby, got some good players in. And instantly he's considered for the Chelsea job. I know he's got the relationship there, but you look at someone like Sol or even like an Ashley Cole or
Chris Hughton
and those roles that they don't get looked at. And it does baffle me, really.
Darren Moore made no sense to me as well. Like, he did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Well, nothing wrong. Unless you know more than me, Troy, you probably do.
No, not more than you. It's just, I absolutely endorse what you say, you know. Darren Moore took over that club when basically Alan Pardew had run them into the ground. And anyone that knows me knows that Alan Pardew is not my favourite two words to put together. He run them into the ground. So they sacked him at last knock and said, Darren, just take over for a little while. If they had sacked Pardew two games before, Moro would have kept them up.
Yeah.
And then what normally happens then is you go, right, it's your job. You've proved that you can do it in the Premier League. We want to get back up. And they stalled and they stalled and they stalled and they couldn't get their targets. And it was almost as if, well, we've got to appoint him now, haven't we? So they appointed Darren. At the first moment of kind of discontent, they're fourth in the league when he got sacked. Fourth in the league. First moment of discontent, gone.
Yeah.
Gone. And it just leaves a sour taste in my mouth. And obviously I was very vocal about it. And then people call me a racist and whatever else, because that's what you do. But absolutely, I just could not see any rhyme or reason for getting rid of Darren Moore. I couldn't see any rhyme or reason for getting rid of Chris Hughton at Brighton. You know, they all tell me Brighton are playing fantastic football. Brilliant. But you've got the same points as what Chrissy got you. So what is it? Is that you want the same points or the better style? Or apparently you were going to be playing free-flowing football that was going to take you, you know, into Europe and beyond, you know? Brighton have got to remember where they are and who they are. You know, so that's you know, it gets to me. It gripes me quite a bit.
Yeah.
No, I totally get that. Well, look, we can only hope that in the future things will definitely change and that, you know, we'll start to see the changes in stadiums, on the pitch, off the pitch, and obviously more black managers. So we're going to make things a little bit more lighthearted now, aren't we, Elliot?
We are. I've got to follow a very, very serious topic, with we haven't really got a name for it. It's just a quick fire round.
We're working on it.
Oh, wow. First episode.
Quick fire round.
First episode.
Me and quick fire rounds are never good.
So it's a quick fire round, just two options on each question, and just the first thing that comes into your head, you have to answer. Make sense?
Yep, it does.
Okay. So let's go.
I'm still nervous.
Don't be nervous. Don't worry.
We'll start easy. So first, Messi or Ronaldo?
Messi.
Ooh. Good choice. Good choice.
Lampard or Gerrard? I know we were just talking about them, but...
Lampard.
Nike or Adidas?
Nike.
If you were a manager, would you be a suit manager or a tracksuit manager?
Suit.
I would too. Crowd noise or stadium noise?
Crowd noise.
Absolutely.
Oh, sorry. What do you crowd noise
is the I'm talking about on Sky Sports, you know, where you pick crowd noise or stadium noise, where you can have the natural sound.
Crowd, No, I don't want the natural stuff. Although I did want it when Lampard and Klopp were having a go at each other.
Yeah, that was good. That's amazing. Right. Not, yeah. Bit juicy.
Yeah. Do you prefer a 40-yard screamer or a tiki-taka team goal?
I'll take a particular 40-yard screamer any day of the week.
And last one, Palace or Spurs?
Here's our soundboard.
Yeah.
Is this going to be edited?
Do you want to
do both answers?
My current allegiance is Palace for obvious reasons. My heart has always been obviously at Tottenham.
Yeah.
We'll take Tottenham.
So do me a favour, put both in and I'll get stick on.
We're going to put that in. That's fine. That is literally so fine.
Well, first episode with Troy Townsend.
Truly honoured. Yeah, truly honoured to be the first episode. Thank you. You're so welcome.
Thank you so much for coming on and being our first guest. It's been a great show actually to kick us off, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure they'll get better once I'm gone. But at least I was the first
one.
We'll
get you back in when we get a bit better.
Thanks so much, Troy.
Thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it. And I am, like I said, truly honoured to be the first one.
Aww.
Thank you. And I'm sure they'll creep up the ladder once you get me off and get to real.
Not sure about that. We've started strong. Next week it's just my dad.
Brilliant. Cheers, okay, Troy. Guys, listen, take
Thanks
care.
Thanks so much. Have a lovely evening. Bye.
You too. Bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the first ever episode of The Run of Play. And of course, thank you to Troy Townsend for joining us. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on social media at Run of Play Pod. You can also send in any questions that you might have and the things that you might want to see next time. We'll be back very soon with another episode with another expert guest. So see you then. Thank you.